Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram this morning. Kia ora, Rod. How are you today?
Oh, Rachel, very well, thank you.
Oh, that is good to hear. Well, last time we spoke to you, you were over in Glasgow reporting on COP26, so I think a good place to start is getting a bit of a recap from you, or I guess a post-match update on how you feel about the way it's all played out. I think that when we spoke to you, it was like 2 days before the deadline. And how are you feeling about the report and some of the feedback from it? What's been some of your major impressions?
A lot of very constructive things happened in Glasgow, not the least of which is the world is very strongly aligned around 1.5 degrees. Now, the plans aren't in place to get there, not the least of which from government, so there is still a shortfall there, but there was good progress on that. And crucially, the timetable's been tightened up, so now governments have to set 5-year targets, not 10, mm-hmm. and then report every year, not every 5 years. And that's going to build a lot of momentum into the system. But the other really positive thing is that extraordinary number of coalitions of the willing have been created and are becoming very effective, whether it's in a particular industry or around a technology or in government and business partnerships or civil society partnerships. And that rich ecosystem of collaboration, to me, is obviously the real key to how we make progress. And I came away very enthused and upbeat about that.
Now, there were some criticisms of New Zealand's participation in this and perhaps our, reticence to make any really decisive action around how our farm emissions are going to be impacting our overall response to climate change. What are your thoughts on this particular part of the feedback and the criticism that we have heard about New Zealand's impact in this?
Overall, New Zealand played the role that it's traditionally done in international meetings like this, whether it be the UN or the WTO or indeed climate, in terms of being very useful on difficult subjects. So, for example, Helen Plume in our Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade has been leading the work stream on transparency, and this is how countries have to report, and that's a very important part of the Kyoto rulebook. And then James Shaw co-facilitated the negotiations on that with his counterpart from Antigua and Barbuda, and they landed that, so it's an important part of the rulebook. So New Zealand's still very good at that. But agriculture is absolutely the blind spot. We're seeing this enormous agricultural revolution underway in the world, and industry leaders here saying this is too hard, we can't do anything about it, and not setting any goals. Some are, but not the major organizations. And that's the blind spot. And I really worry because I care a lot about farming and how it progresses. And it's absolutely missing this transformative change in land use, agriculture and food.
What do we need to see, or what's the conversation that needs to happen now? Because it feels like we end up at this point all the time, but we never seem to get past it. What do we need to get past it, do you think, Rod?
I'm a great believer in the role of civil society, so that was very apparent at COP. So yes, there are negotiations in one group. Yes, there is business and other leaders in the sort of the second forum, if you like. But it's the role that civil society plays throughout, whether it be right on the very challenging edge or right in the thick of negotiations. So this is an issue for civil society here in New Zealand to really encourage and more forcefully push these agricultural industry leaders to come to the table, because they've got to wake up to the great risk that they're running by sticking with the status quo and giving only lip service to what needs to be done versus huge opportunities for them by being part of this land use, agricultural and food transformation of the world. Because this is the sector that globally is the largest single source of emissions. And that's the first point to think of.
Yeah.
But on the upside, there's so much that farmers can do to help bring nature climate solutions to the table. And that's a really important part of all this.
Well, let's talk about the National Party now. It's been quite a full-on couple of weeks for them. They've got a new leader in Christopher Luxon, and the cabinet reshuffle has come through, or the shadow cabinet reshuffle has come through this week as well. Now, it's been a bit of a rocky start, perhaps, for Christopher Luxon with some of his major media engagements that he's had. What would you say are some of your first impressions of this leadership change and how he's handling it so far?
Luxon brings a clarity and a strong leadership skills to this that's been lacking. So that of all the people who have been around in this job for a little while now, he's the one who has the best chance of trying to bring together the very disparate factions in National. So that's good. He's a classic example of so many people who not only come into politics, but into politics for a long time, who are so enmeshed in the process of politics, they never really think about what they're trying to do.
Mm.
So his comments on the economy are extremely naive. So he identifies productivity as a great problem, or lack of productivity growth. Well, that's been a chorus for at least the last 30 years. It's common to most developed countries. And then it's clear he hasn't actually thought about how you respond to that. And it's quite different about how you respond to increasing the productivity in Air New Zealand, he was good at that, versus across an economy. And again, you see that in other spokespeople in cabinet too. In those spokesperson roles. And so that's my big concern. And I don't know when they're going to have time or necessarily the inclination to have a deep think. They've been wasting their time in opposition by not thinking about what they want to do when they're in government. They've been totally consumed by who might lead them back into government with no thought about what they would do when they get there.
Now, there has also been a bit of discussion about, you know, there's been a lot of changes to the National Party lineup in the last couple of years, but also we haven't seen a lot of changes in perhaps the organisation of the party, so the board, the people kind of more behind the scenes. Do you think that that is going to be necessary in order to really rehabilitate the culture in the National Party, or have they got a possibility of doing that with the lineup they currently have?
There's good people in caucus who could turn this around. However, the broader structure of the party is what's failed them. And that's made them, they've resulted in some disastrous picks for some candidates who have completely blown up and gone away. This succession of leaders and who have failed in the job, and these continuing deep rifts in the party. That's a leadership problem right at the very top. It's a very old and tired-looking leadership, and the structure is deficient too. So if this is a party that wants to be a sort of a 21st century political party, it's got a lot of work to do.
Now, you're also quite interested in a particular facet of the conversation that's come out of the National Party at the moment, particularly Luxon and Bridges accusing Adrian Orr, who's the governor of the Reserve Bank, going rogue on policy. Now, can you explain a wee bit about what this situation is and why is it important or perhaps not important? What's going on there?
It was actually Bridges and Seymour who were saying this in a podcast last week. They were saying that Orr's gone rogue on policy, which is why we've had housing inflation. And they're giving very contradictory views. On one hand, they're saying he's gone rogue and thus neglecting his mandate, the Reserve Bank mandate under its contractual relationship with the government, or that they're somehow captive of government. So it's hard to imagine how you could do both at the same time. But it's completely wrong to sheet home housing price inflation to the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank did what every other Reserve Bank did around the country, around the world, which was create a lot of money to keep economies going. So the first counterfactual you have to ask Bridges and Seymour, well, if there wasn't quantitative easing, how would you have kept the economy going? Who would have paid wage subsidies all the way through? Then the next thing is that there's far more to the housing price inflation than the amount of money around, certainly a factor, but it's all the supply side ones. And then they were also very critical of Orr on the grounds that he spends too much time on not very important things like climate and to Aomari. Well, on climate, it's been central banks, amongst others, who have been identifying the great risks of the financial system that climate poses. This is why Carney at the Bank of England led the work on the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, which large companies now have to make. So it's complete nonsense to say that climate is not important. And to Aomari is really important too. And the Reserve Bank is very articulate about what the banking system, how you would express that in terms which are very New Zealand terms. And it's a very different way about thinking the world. That's very constructive, and it's hardly a major preoccupation of the Reserve Bank. It matters to them, and they're doing it well, but they don't have sort of the equivalent of monetary policy meetings around Te'ao Māori. I mean, that's that's very disrespectful of the people involved, both within the Reserve Bank, but of those people who believe that being able to express who we are as a people is actually important to what we are as a financial system.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Rod Oram. It's always great to have you on the show. This is possibly our last one we'll have with you before Christmas, so have a fantastic holiday, and we will see you and chat to you again in the new year. Thanks for all your contributions.
My great pleasure. Have a wonderful break yourself, and see you in 2022.
See you in 2022. Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Rod.